This is the Success Coaching Podcast with hosts Todd Foster, Alyssa Stanley, and Kelly Scar.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Success Coaching Podcast. My name is Alyssa Stanley, and I am here with co-hosts Todd Foster and Kelly Scar. Today, we are talking with Eric Simon, a.k.a. The Broke Agent, who brings humor to the real estate industry. But let's be honest, he uses social media strategically by creating content that brings to light what agents are really thinking, but what they don't want to say. So this should be a super fun podcast, because if you go to his Instagram page, The Broke Agent, it's pretty apparent that he has a great sense of humor. Eric, thank you for hanging with us today.
Thanks for having me on. That actually used to be my tagline: what everyone is thinking, but nobody is saying. That used to be on my Instagram profile. Perfect intro.
So I, for one, am not a real estate agent, but I know that it was by choice. But I know, like, from the outside looking in, it seems like this industry paints this picture of extreme glamour and success, fancy suits, driving even more expensive cars, but none of them have failures, like, ever. None of them have ever failed. So I'm curious, because as I scroll through your Instagram page, number one, it's hilarious. And number two, you call a lot of personalities out and really get into the heads of what, like I said, what agents want to say, but they don't. What the heck made you sit down one day and say, I'm going to flip this script, like, do things totally different?
So I started as a buyer's agent, well, assistant, then a buyer's agent, where I was sitting all these dead open houses every Saturday, every Sunday, and every Tuesday. And this is back in 2014, 2015. So before Instagram kind of evolved, and it was just a photo sharing app, basically. I remember scrolling through and following all these real estate accounts and all these realtors in my brokerage, and they were all just crushing it. Somehow every single person on Instagram was absolutely crushing it. Everybody was a top producer. Everybody was a luxury agent. Everybody was posting the same motivational quotes. And I was sitting there in a dead open house, making no money, spending more money on, like, gas every single day. Like, I was literally bringing in nothing. And I was like, it's impossible that everybody is crushing it, because 87% of agents fail in the first 5 years. At least this is what everyone, the statistic that is, like, you know, being hammered into our heads. So that basically caused The Broke Agent. And I started tweeting out kind of the inner monologue of what I was thinking and all the insecurities I had sitting these dead open houses and not knowing what to do, because, as you know, a recently licensed agent, you have no idea what you're doing. So I think it was that contrast that made it really successful off the bat, because at the time, no one was being that vulnerable on Instagram, at least in the real estate industry. I'm not saying, like, I, you know, revolutionized this, but I didn't see too much on Instagram of agents posting their failures or saying, like, hey, this is something that happened in a deal, or this part of real estate sucks. Like, it was all just success. And it was really, it just turned me off. I didn't like looking at it. Like, who wants to see other people crushing it? You know, I like to see, I mean, I like to root for my friends, but, like, I get jealous of other people.
So The Broke Agent wasn't like a tagline. That was legit.
Well, yeah. I mean, the point is, yeah, I mean, I, you know, did some other stuff on the side too, I guess, social media consulting and other businesses, not other businesses. I just made that up. But The Broke Agent was supposed to appeal more to the masses, because 90% of agents are doing, like, what, 3 to 5 deals a year. So I think that was just like, if I'm going to call myself the rich agent, that's not funny. And then The Broke Agent was like a powerful enough name where if I were to comment on other people's Instagrams, people would come to that profile.
Well, I think mostly because there's no authenticity in real estate. I mean, there's just, you know, you being vulnerable, you did kind of change the game, because, you know, nobody wants to post about their failures. Nobody wants to post about the no listings that they have. Nobody wants to talk about the no buyers that they're taking out in their cars, right? Nobody wants to talk about any of that shit. So, you know, I think there was a certain level of authenticity that you lent to the industry, and people were like, holy shit, this is refreshing. Even, you know, people like me watching that does sell houses for a living, right? I'm looking at that going, damn, this guy is like, he is totally bringing this level of authenticity that just does not exist in this industry, which was quite refreshing, actually.
Yeah. Well, thank you. There was a lot of negative pushback at first from it too, because people thought that it was kind of exposing all of the failures of real estate agents and, like, exposing our inner thoughts. And a lot of people on Facebook, especially, were just like, stop posting this shit. Like, you are making us look terrible. Like, you're exposing the incompetence of all of us. Like, don't share this. I remember a real estate coach named Lee Brown, who's pretty prominent. She commented on a article that I wrote on thebrokeagent.com back in the day that was just like five things to do while you're bored in an open house. And one of them was like, do laundry, slam your head against the wall, like drink water. Like, it was the dumbest five things ever. I was trying to do like BuzzFeed style things. And she commented, it was just like, if you're sharing this, like, you're doing a disservice to the real estate industry and like to your own brand.
Hey, so before we get into, you know, all the spaghetti that you threw at the wall that, you know, didn't stick, I'm curious about the monetization of the Broke Agent and like, what was the tipping point? I'm a disciple of Gary Vee. You know, I've been following the guy since probably 2010, 2011. You know, I've seen him speak a number of different times. I've read all of his books, all of that kind of stuff. And he talks about, you know, jab, 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 right hook. It's all about the give, the give, the give, and then eventually go for the ask. What was your tipping point where you finally realized, holy shit, I've got something here that can actually make me money and you know, I can make a living off of this?
Well, the point always was to make money off of it. I didn't just start it as like a fun side project. Like I said, I was never really that passionate about real estate in itself. So this was always kind of like my, you know, not side project, but it was always like my goal is to grow this thing into a large like media company, basically. But the monetization at first was really difficult because Instagram was completely different back then, right? You didn't have stories. You didn't have, well, I guess Snapchat was there, but you didn't have like all these different opportunities to promote like different products or brands or affiliates. So with stories now, you could do swipe ups and everything like that. But I didn't want to like flood my feed with a bunch of like, you know, sponsorships basically. So initially I was like, okay, I'm going to sell merchandise and it's going to be funny real estate merch. But how many people are going to buy like 10 funny real estate shirts, right? And if I capture 10% of the 1.7 million realtors, if I capture that audience, meaning I get 170,000 followers and then 10% of them buy merch, like the numbers don't work out to make a ton of money on this. But the tipping point was when a bunch of my friends were asking me for social media advice and other realtors were asking me for social media advice. And I realized this is what I'm really good at. Like, I know Instagram extremely well. Like, I study the shit. I know what to do with the algorithm. I know when it evolves and like how to do reels. I know what hashtags to use, what captions, how to post, what time to post. And then I realized I could really help agents with their social media, whether it's just from a consulting role or actually producing content that helps them. So I started becoming a partner with this template platform called Coffee and Contracts that does content for real estate agents, because a huge pain in the real estate industry is coming up with content. Or post content. Like, if you're a successful agent, you're not going to be doing what I'm doing. You're not going to be putting 15 Instagram stories a day, or at least focusing on growing your Instagram like that. The tipping point was basically realizing, like, how can I help agents get more business also? So instead of just feeding like funny content, I'm doing way more educational content, at least social media based. So that's where the real monetization came in. And then also as the following grew, a lot of brands realize like, hey, this is the best platform possible to reach real estate agents in a way that doesn't seem too salesy.
I have a question in regards to the monetization part of it. So the Coffee and Contracts portion, it's a subscription-based service. Are you starting to see more of revenue in that in terms of other areas of your business, or where do you see the most money coming in from right now?
That is huge. So that is the main source of income right now for the Broke Agents. I think there must be over 1,000 agents that have signed up through me specifically, because agents want funny content. And a lot of agents aren't funny. They can't produce it. And the entire platform isn't just my funny content. This is literally like 10% of this massive template platform with you know, email templates, buyer guides, seller guides, literally everything you could ever ask for. And all they have to do is replace their branding and customize the text if they want to. And this is content that is not agent to agent. So it's not like, oh, my seller sucks, they're spying on me, or this buyer isn't pre-approved. It's content directed to clients. Because a lot of agents have always said to me, they're like, I want to share your content, but there's a huge At the Broke Agent watermark on it. And I don't want to look like a fool in front of my clients. And I don't want to like expose how much I like despise my clients right now. So this content is more specific to clients. So that's, it's been great. And, you know, it's really fun creating that type of content because it's different than the normal content that I create.
Do you see the future of your company branching out more towards a subscription-based product?
Possibly. I think I see the future kind of more real estate education. Right now we're creating a course, a video course that's hilarious. Matt Leonetti's involved, and we have a bunch of other like heavy hitting like real estate influencers and top producers that are creating content for this video course. And the goal is like how to not look like a moron your first 5 years in real estate. And it's all the experiences that we've had that we, you know, screwed up on basically, and all the insecurities that we had. And it's basically like, you know, here's what's going to happen. Here's what they're going to ask you at an open house. How many square feet? What year was it built? How many offers do you have? Like this is stuff that you're not taught until you actually experience it. I know some brokerages have good training programs, but I think, you know, I want to like close that gap. Like there's 87% of agents fail in the first 5 years. Like it'd be cool to get that number down. The reason is because agents think they just get their license, they start selling houses and that's it. But no one is teaching them like the shit that they're actually going to have to deal with. Like you learn nothing in real estate school. Absolutely. Where I see the future is more like people getting value from the Broke Agent brand and our network and our content and our media, kind of like a bar stool of real estate, basically, where you have other creators, other podcasts, blogs, news, that type of thing, where it's like, okay, I'm getting laughs, I'm getting value, I'm learning about the market, I'm learning social media tips, and I'm actually selling more real estate because of this brand. That's the goal.
At what point in the business did you start getting approached by your affiliates and your sponsors to say, hey, you're the big player now, how can we get into this?
Pretty early on, I want to say 2016, 17, and I started this in 2015, is when I started doing the occasional ad on my feed post. But now, like I said, with stories, I have an email list, I have a massive Facebook following, a TikTok following, a Twitter following. There's so many different avenues to promote these products where it's not like in your face that it's really picked up the last couple of years. But I've been very specific about what brands I work with, and every brand that I work with has to actually help real estate agents. Like that's one thing I'm really proud of what I've done is I didn't just take in a bunch of like shitty like startup apps and start throwing ads at people, because then my recommendations for something mean nothing. Right. So it was very like, even though like I took a huge monetary hit for not doing this, it's always like, okay, I'm going to do this, but I have to do it in my voice. Still has to be funny. And whatever I'm delivering has to be something that agents could actually use.
So if you talk to someone right now, and I know this is stuff you probably teach, but since our listeners are awesome, if you will indulge me for a minute, Instagram now, 2021, compared to when you started, is probably much more saturated, correct? So how do you stick out? Because I feel like the world of social media is really overwhelming. And it is really hard to go viral and all the things. So how do you even be seen?
You just have to provide more value than the next person. And I think in real estate, we're in a really unique opportunity for people to educate their audience. So instead of just posting, just solds, just listeds, in escrows, another one closed, here's my new team member, all that boring stuff that people scroll right across and don't care about. Like it's good to show your success occasionally, of course. You have to be providing nonstop value. Like how do you get someone to stop on your Instagram reel? Are you teaching them about the pre-approval process? Are you showing them something cool in a house? Are you adding music to it? Is it visually appealing? Are you doing like a funny dance or, you know, making a funny skit? So if you're not doing education, you got to be doing humor, or you got to be doing something that's like visually appealing.
So quality of content is way more important than just 5 posts a day.
Yeah. I mean, consistency is important too. It's like an instrument that you have to keep using. Like you have to be posting on Instagram stories. Like I wake up in the morning and try to post 2 or 3 stories before I even post my feed post. Because if they start interacting with my stories, then my feed post is more likely to get good engagement. So you have to keep feeding the machine. It's like, it's addictive and it sucks because I'll notice a significant decrease in engagement and following if I don't post for a couple of days, which I never do. But like on a Sunday, I'll be like, all right, whatever. I'm just throwing up a feed post, no stories, no nothing. I'll pick up 20, 30 followers that day. When on average day, I'll pick up like 200 to 400 if I'm like really going ham on it.
I have a question about other platforms, other Instagram. So how do you stop the scroll, let's say on LinkedIn or Facebook, or where you don't really have the highlight reels or the you know, the places where people have the video content. How do you stop the scroll that way?
I don't really consume content on LinkedIn or Facebook. Facebook, I use, I need to do LinkedIn. I know the organic reach on LinkedIn is huge. That's a glaring mistake on my part right now about not having LinkedIn content. And I'd like to hire someone that could help with that because I'm just spreading myself too thin on all these other platforms. For Facebook, I've been using it as basically just a publisher. You know, I'll post a meme or I'll post a video or a promotion or, you know, link to our podcast or something. And I use it as a testing ground for Instagram too, because I think like my Instagram feed is kind of like the holy grail of content, because that's where everyone sees the likes. That's where everyone sees the comments. It's more intimate. Where on Facebook, if you comment, your grandmother could see that you commented on this photo, right? So like everybody sees it. So I'll use Facebook to test like a meme and see if it does well. Okay, I'll throw that on Instagram. And then I'll also use Facebook just to like look up my memories. So I'll get like a notification. I'll say, Eric Stick Simon posted a status in 2011, and it's usually horrific and I have to delete it and make sure I don't get canceled. So I'm basically, those are the two reasons I use Facebook: to monitor old action and to publish it.
I just have a mindset question, because you post pretty polarizing content. And then like we talked about earlier, you probably get people who aren't happy with your content and then people who are ecstatic with your content and love it. So when you very first started, did you have tough enough skin where that didn't bother you? Or did you really have to get used to those negative comments if you had them? Because, you know, there is a dark side to social media. It can be hard on your mental health. So how do you battle that?
Thankfully, like 99% of the feedback is overwhelmingly positive. I'm not doing anything political. I've made a few mistakes for sure about like where the line is. And you know, it's a way different time now than it was back in 2015, 16 when I first started posting. But I think even a negative comment that maybe makes me feel like shit, like briefly, it does help like gauge where my content can evolve from. So it's not like I'll take a content and be like, okay, fine, I'm never posting anything like this again. But it does help me like construct like an opinion about that type of post. Like, oh, did I word it wrong? Was I insulting to this specific group of people? Okay, why did they take it like this? And then maybe I could evolve and make better content in the future. I'm not saying like I'm, you know, I'll be a squish to any comment and I will, sure, you know, be like fearful of everything I post. But I think negative comments or people that do like an eye roll emoji, that's brutal. Like just saying they basically think the content's boring. Or the worst one is, the worst comment ever is, I've been following you for 5 years and, you know, this isn't funny and I'm unfollowing you. Or I've been following you for 5 years and this is extremely insulting. And I used to share your content. Like I've had Facebook messages with people. Like Facebook is way more brutal than anything.
I would agree.
Like if I post anything like alcohol related or something, people will go insane about that and be like, stop promoting alcoholism. Or if I promote something that, you know, a meme of a political figure that has nothing to do with that political figure, but it's just about their expression, that's a complete danger zone. So I try to avoid that a little bit too.
I think a key component of that, from what I understand, is you use negative comments or emojis almost as data to how to better your content and your brand. I mean, I think that's, nobody's talking about that as far as the mental health side of social media. Use that as data. If this is a business, that's data. That's huge. I've never heard anyone explain it like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's different for like a social media influencer that's posting a picture of their body and they're getting negative images. It's not like, or negative comments. It's not like they could be like, okay, cool, then I'll, you know, grow my hair out again. I mean, I guess you can do that, but you know what I'm saying? I think it does help decide what content to post, and even a lack of engagement, if anything, that's always the number one sign for me. So if I post something that does terrible, then I know like, okay, they don't like that sort of content, or this one was too wordy. Like I posted a reel yesterday that I thought was hilarious with Ryan Gosling. It was like this long text conversation and, you know, and then he like robs a bank and it was like this entire like story, but there was too much going on in the video and it got probably the worst engagement of a video I've had in 3 years. And I thought it was going to be one of the best videos I've ever posted. So that was good to know, like, okay, there's too much going on here. The text is too small. The text conversation is too elaborate. Like people can't read that much. Like they want on Instagram now to see something within the first 3 seconds, understand what it is, and then decide if they're going to watch.
Well, I think this is a good segue into, you know, talking about strategy. You said something earlier that kind of was interesting, you know, it's waking up and posting to your stories before you post into your feed. Like, are you sitting down the night before and going, okay, this is what I'm going to post to my stories before I, you know, post into my feed? Or do you just wake up and go, okay, I'm Eric Simon, the broke agent, and blah, blah, blah. And like, you know, is there strategy? Is there strategic thinking behind doing that? And then on top of that, let's get into talking about some of the massive failures that the broke agent has seen over the years. Cause I think that that's a very interesting conversation, especially for our audience.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to call them massive failures, but they're definitely failures. Just your brutal, horrible shortcomings. I think that the strategy, I don't have like a posting schedule. I post based off of trends for sure. So, you know, like around the weekends, I try to do more open house content on, like, depending on, like, it's October, right? So I'm doing more spooky content. Like, my stories have scary music attached to them. Or Squid Game is a really popular show on Netflix right now. So I'm doing Squid Game memes. So I do try to stay culturally relevant and be relevant to, like, whatever's going on in sports or just pop culture, basically. But now I have so many submissions and I have so many agents sending me content, and there's so many agents producing good, funny content now that I really have unlimited stuff to post on my stories, whether it's bad real estate picks, other people's reels, questionnaires, that type of thing. So I don't really map out my content, but I have so much stuff saved, saved on my phone, or that I'm tagged on Instagram, that any, like right now I could look at my phone and there could be 15 Instagram stories from just stuff that people are sending me or stuff that I could actually repost, which is really cool. Because back in the day, there was nothing. Like, this is me finding content, going on real estate Facebook groups, Googling bad real estate picks, you know, looking at real estate agents' Instagram and trying to figure out what they're talking about to create a meme out of. But now there's so much content being fed to me, that problem is becoming not as big of an issue.
If you're enjoying this episode, please rate, review, and follow the Success Coaching Podcast on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, that's very eye-opening, actually, because, I mean, you follow, so, you know, Gary Vee talks a lot about overnight success, right? So it's, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, what you see above the surface, you know, in terms of an iceberg versus what you see below the surface, or whatever, you know, the duck on the surface of the water. You don't see the legs, you know, battling below and kicking wildly. And so, you know, if I were somebody that just came onto Instagram and I found you, I would look at your, you know, 300 and some odd thousand followers and go, God, this guy is like an overnight success. Like, he's an influencer. Like, how, right? So what, talk a little bit about, you know, some of the stuff that you kind of threw at the wall prior to, you know, some of these breakthroughs that you found. You know, how much content were you creating that you never posted?
Just to touch upon that first point about not being an overnight success, this has been since 2015, posting, you know, sometimes 3-5 times a day. And now with stories, posting 10 or 15 times a day. So I'm producing like 15-20 pieces of content every single day for Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. This has taken forever. And then back in the early Instagram days, you could do way more community engagement. So I would go on hashtag realtor, hashtag real estate, hashtag luxury agent, and like a million photos, and then get those followers, and then comment on a million photos. And then I would go into real estate Facebook groups and post my memes and hope people would like my Facebook page. So this was like, that was like almost 80% of it back then. Because like I said, with Instagram, there wasn't stories, there wasn't all of these, there wasn't IGTVs, there wasn't reels. It was basically like, okay, I'll post a meme or I'll post a text thing. And then for the next 2 or 3 hours, I'm going to like a bunch of photos and follow a bunch of accounts and unfollow a bunch of accounts, because this is before Instagram, you know, really cracked down on that type of stuff. So now you can't really do that. I mean, you could still like use the comment strategy, comment on 5 or 10 photos a day within your industry and then get followers, but it's not like that anymore. Then the second part, as far as failures, there's been so much content that, you know, I've created that hasn't done well. Like my YouTube channel, I tried to do like skits where I was just filming myself, or I had like a rap video that's super cringe. I have a book called Commission Impossible, which I wrote in 2018 and 19. It's right here. I mean, it's holding on my computer, so I'm not going to take it out. But it's basically it's a comic book about this guy named Ben Ackerman, the BA. And it's like his first year in real estate. And it's a funny book. But the point of that, I was like, I was trying to make money, you know, and I was like, how do I, it's just another brand. Also, it's like, okay, here's the book. I could send the book to people. Maybe it'll help me get verified on Instagram. It's just another thing. But I wouldn't really call that a failure. It was just like, not, you know, like a couple thousand people bought it. It was not a New York Times bestseller by any means. I had an animation series, and by series, I mean one episode, where I raised a $7,500 for a Kickstarter, and it's like a 1 minute, you know, I thought like, okay, this could be a show, The Broke Agent. It's a animation show like the South Park of Real Estate or the Caribbean Enthusiasm of Real Estate, except animated. And animation is insanely expensive. And I posted that and it, you know, did okay, but no one was like, hey, like, oh, this is incredible. I have to see another one of these, basically. So that was feedback right there, knowing that this is not something I wanted to pursue. And then we had The Broke News Network, which was a new show that I was doing. Sorry. A year ago, and I did it for 9 months, and it was a 15-minute news show about market updates, social media help, a funny real estate story. And it was unbelievably time consuming. We had to write a script. We had to edit it into 4 separate days, post them to IGTV, flip them into reels. And I wouldn't call it a failure, but it was just something where the time consumption of it was not equal to, you know, the feedback or the results that we were getting. Like, we're spending so much money, we're renting out a studio, we're doing all this shit for what, you know, like, people weren't appreciating it as much, or maybe it just wasn't that good. Who knows?
I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a kind of a fun show to kind of tune into. And there's some good nuggets in there. I just tuned in mostly for the humor, because I thought you guys played off each other really, really well. And so I was curious about what happened to that. So thank you for the insight there. I didn't realize there was like the amount of resources being put into that is just crazy. But then again, I mean, that comes back to this whole idea of kind of pulling back the curtain and not understanding what you're seeing. Like, you're seeing a very highly polished piece of content, but not realizing like you guys are actually putting resources into this, right? You guys aren't just sitting in a studio with your phone going, okay, go. Right.
But this was the most time consuming thing maybe I've ever done with The Broke Agent that wasn't like just posting. This was at least 10 hours a week of coming up with a script, finding the stories, driving to Long Beach, filming for maybe 3-4 hours, cutting that down into 15 minutes, and then cutting those into Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday eventually, because we realized that people don't watch 15-minute videos on IGTV. It's not like YouTube. And IGTV just sucked. Like, once Reels came out, people were like, I have to click something to continue watching. And if I click out of the app, I'm not watching it anymore. It's not like YouTube. So if you click out, you're done. And we had so many nuggets, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes into the episode that nobody was even getting to. So then we switched to shorter form content. Then we did Reels. Enough's enough, you know? But I mean, I'm still friends with them. It was a really fun show to produce.
At what point did you discover that you were funny? I saw that you were a marketing intern and assistant at the Laugh Factory before you got into real estate.
Just look at my resume.
Yeah, page 7. It's amazing what you can find on page 7 of Google. Did you learn things from there, or did you have an intention to become an improv actor, or were you really a marketing assistant, or was that a title you had given yourself? Where did the marketing background come from?
That was an internship I had. I went to USC and then I got an internship at the Laugh Factory. I always liked comedy and I was really good at social media. In college and in high school, I realized I was funny, at least on social media. I was always funny, like, you know, communicating with people, just like in conversation. But, you know, I never wanted to do stand-up or acting or anything like that. I don't have the balls to do that. And I'm just like, I get kind of like freaked out on camera sometimes. But I think on Facebook, I really enjoyed posting comments on people's walls that got good engagement. Cause back in the day, Facebook was like that, where you could post a funny video or post a clapback or post a funny picture or something like that and get like a lot of engagement going. It was never like for the purpose of building a brand, just strictly like to talk shit to people, basically. And I was really good at that. And then I got this internship at the Laugh Factory and I was their social media intern, basically, where I was posting on their Facebook, their Twitter, scheduling out things, figuring out, you know, what content did well. So it was all good preparation for The Broke Agent. Was around a lot of comedy, went to a lot of comedy shows. And then I got hired as like the marketing assistant there, where I had to come up with ideas to get more people to come to shows, like 6 shows where they didn't have enough people there for like their Tuesday or Wednesday night. So I'd come up with little promotions, contests, that type of thing.
Where can we find you to do like the coffee and contracts, or learn about Instagram ever? Because you have all of the things to offer people. And there's so many Instagram gurus and Instagram coaches, but you are legit. So where can people go to find everything?
You could go to just The Broke Agent on Instagram, and then my link in bio, there's a link tree there that has access to all these things. And then thebrokeagent.com has, you know, all the ways you can reach me, whether it's for consulting, the template platform, the podcast. And then I'm writing articles for theclose.com. And basically every month I'm coming out with a new article about like social media. I did one on Reels, how to get engagement on Reels, what agents to follow for Reels. And then I'm posting one, I think either today or tomorrow, that's 12 ways to get more engagement on your Instagram stories.
Have you ever had any issues with copywritten or trademark issues?
Yeah. Yes, I have. I was in like a lawsuit for posting a photo of a water bottle on one of my first blogs back in 2015. Apparently there's a spider software that on Google that if you use like a trademarked image or a stock photo, I don't know if it was like a Getty image or what it was. And this is in the same post that I was talking about earlier about five things to do while you're bored in an open house. One of them literally was just drink water, posted a photo of a water bottle. And they thought that like, cause I had a decent following back then, that they were like, I was going to pay them a lot of money for using this photo. So there was that. I've used a meme before that was a, like a photograph. So the art, take it down. And then of course, just like in posting memes in general, you never know where the origination of the meme comes from. I'm always trying to credit people. And that's like one of my, like I have to credit people. Like if someone sends me a meme, I ask them like, is this from you? Or where did you get this thing? Because people get really pissed off about that. Especially like if you're a realtor, you create that meme, goes to a Facebook page, another realtor, you know, puts their watermark on it, sends it to me. I post it and they're like, the broke agent just stole my meme, credited somebody else. Like that shit sucks. Like I feel horrible when that happens. So that happens not that regularly because I'm so diligent with how I post, but that's just a thing in the meme game, you know?
So what are your tips, like when you're posting, to avoid copywriting issues?
Try to find the original source, I guess. Most agents won't really have this problem because you're not sharing too many memes, I would think, right? So I don't know. I always like if someone sends me something or if I screenshot something from another meme account, I attribute credit in the caption. So there's a popular meme account called Tank Sinatra. And if I throw at an open house to whatever his joke was, I always say like originated from Tank Sinatra, or I'll tag that person as well, because then that person likes that I use their posts and they're going to get followers from it. So anytime you could just tag people as much as possible, like who cares if it's not yours? People don't even read the caption half the time. Right. So like I'm over worrying about whether it's my original post or someone else's, just as long as I'm attributing.
Are you personally posting these things every day, or do you have a team, or do you use an automated software, or what exactly are you doing? Or if you are doing it by yourself, how much time are you spending per day?
All day. It is just me. I have, you know, Matt Leonetti is now like a partner with me in the Overask podcast. He's sending me a ton of content. Dan O'Neill, who I produced a lot of content with, who I was just at the Tom Ferry conference with, he sends me a lot of content. I have a couple of people that are making live action memes for me right now. So it's becoming more people are sending me content. And like I said, agents are submitting stuff to me all day. I probably have 200, 300 DMs a day from just agents, either sending me their reels, sending me their funny listing videos, sending me a meme. And it's really difficult to come through all these and like find the best ones now because it's getting overwhelming. But I'm posting everything. I don't want to give that up yet because it's my brand, and password to someone or someone posting something that isn't in my voice or responding to a DM in a way that I wouldn't want could be detrimental to the future of it. So right now it's all me. I need a posting schedule. I need more of a streamlined process. But
yeah, I guess I, you know, because you are on the Success Coaching podcast, I guess I am curious about the scalability of the broke agent at this point. I mean, you had mentioned, you know, Todd asked you the question, like, are you still posting and whatnot? I totally get and understand that, you know, the broke agent is your voice and giving up some of that control. I mean, there's got to be certain layers of your company that, you know, that's scalable, that you can relinquish some of that control, you know, to other people and, you know, help to grow the brand, I guess, essentially, you know, freeing you up from doing the minutia work, like, you know, combing through 300 videos a day or 300 DMs a day. I mean, shit, man, that's not, you're going to burn yourself out. That's not scalable. So what does the growth of the company look like for you, you know, envisioning it, you know, 2 to 5 years from now?
Yeah, I think kind of how I mentioned before, you know, I hate to keep using Barstool as an example, but I think they grew their media company in the perfect way as far as having like a larger account, like their Barstool Sports. And then they have all these other forms of media. They have different podcasts. They have Chicks in the Office. They used to have Call Her Daddy. They have the hockey podcast, baseball podcast, all this type of content. And that's exactly what I want to do. I want to have different podcasts. I want to have a blog. I want to have news. I want to have the Bad Real Estate Picks account. So these are all tasks that I could delegate where someone runs Bad Real Estate Picks, who I trust, where someone is coming through the DMs, who is responding through Facebook messages. And these are all, this answer is going to sound just all over the place, but I want more creators that are like, I want to grow my following. I want to be under the Broke Agent brand. The Broke Agent's going to post my stuff. And I'm going to create content that the Broke Agent could use. And I also see this going in the direction of real estate conferences, more speaking gigs, happy too, where it's just a whole batch of really knowledgeable kind of social media creators that people want to hear from and that have fun. And there's a, you know, humoristic, or not, it's not a word, humorous side to anything that's going on with the content.
You watch like Selling Sunset and Liz at like Million Dollar Listing LA. Do those shows drive you crazy? Because I've watched a few of them and they don't show a whole lot of like the downsides to real estate. They show like the glamorous downsides, right?
I think initially they did, but I think they're a net positive for sure on the industry, because I know some of them now and they're all really cool. Ryan Serhan is epic and he's been like, you know, a supporter of the brand. He came on our podcast and they're making it cooler to be in real estate. I think it's cooler now. I think it's more respected. I think Selling Sunset, you know, of course it's glamorous and, you know, probably some of it is bullshit and scripted, but mm-hmm. I think that it is bringing like a new age of real estate agents that are younger and that are like, hey, this is actually pretty sweet. Like, this looks awesome. Like, you just sell $10 million houses around like hot people all day. Like, I'm in. But, you know, initially it drove me a little nuts just because, you know, it'd be like, Ryan's commission is going to be $300,000. And here I am like sitting in the same open houses, like posting memes. So that was a little difficult to swallow. But I think the shows are good and constant conversation around real estate. It's good for the brand because I could contrast those shows, make content around those shows. And then I could also have all of those people on the Overass podcast and network with them.
In terms of social media, do you see a certain demographic? Because we've been told in the past ages, my son's always said Facebook's, you know, for old people. When you're posting things and running these campaigns, are you seeing a trend of who's who on these social media platforms?
Yeah, I mean, Facebook's definitely an older audience. All these apps ageify, though. So Facebook in high school and college was for high school, and for at least, you know, 10 years ago for me, was for high school and college kids. And now Instagram is ageifying, and now TikTok is the new app, and it used to be Vine. So even though you'll think like, why would I post on TikTok to a bunch of like 16-year-olds? You already see the massive influx of real estate agents. Like, you know, Gary Vee is constantly talking about TikTok. People listen to Gary Vee. People listen to Tom Ferry. They know where the puck is going. So even though there's younger demographics on different platforms, you know, it's probably TikTok youngest, Instagram, Facebook, you know, Twitter's kind of a collection of everybody. It's important to be where all those platforms are, especially if you're a real estate agent, to stay top of mind and to remain relevant. And if you don't learn TikTok, you're not going to learn Reels, right? I mean, you can learn Reels now, but people that were already doing TikTok, the process of going over to Reels was so much smoother because they already understood the editing. They understood the music aspect to it. They understood how to post. So you got to be everywhere.
Do you see a new and upcoming thing? You see a new social media platform being launched in the future to replace one of these?
Sure, there will be. Vine was huge, 6 seconds, and that was done in like 2015. I think just vertical video right now is the thing everywhere. I think Facebook is adopting it. YouTube has YouTube Shorts, obviously Instagram Reels and TikTok. So I think as long as you're making vertical, high quality, 15-second, 30-second video, you're at least going to be like trending in the right direction. But I'm sure there's going to be another app, and you know, it's possible Instagram shuts down and, you know, my entire career is done. So that's how you got to join the mailing list.
And how would they do that?
Link in bio or thebrokeagent.com.
Hold up.
It's time for the lightning round.
All right. Question number one, nickname your parents used to call you.
EJ, Eric, Joel. Joel's my middle name, Jewish.
What was the last song that you downloaded?
What is this, 2005 off of Kazaa? I don't know. Lollipop Remix in 2008? Or Just Dance by Lady Gaga? I don't remember the last song I downloaded. I don't download music.
All right. Superpowers, invisibility or super strength?
Invisibility, for sure. Why would I need strength for what? I'm, you know, not going to be the world's strongest man. My sports career is already done. I'm 31. I'd rather just, you know, be able to sneak around places. It sounds like I can make more money. I can make more money being invisible than strong. Right? I mean, what would I do if I was strong? It's
true.
Not.
Yeah, true.
Unless like a super villain's coming.
Texting or talking?
I would probably text back, but I get, you know, it sucks when text messages build up and then you haven't responded to someone. So sometimes it is nice to call. So, but I would say texting.
Fill in the blank. Taylor Swift is.
I love Taylor Swift.
Which song did Taylor Swift write about you, Eric?
I don't know. I don't know her songs that well. I mean, I've heard them a million times, but I don't know the actual titles to any of them.
She's just not listening.
Yeah. Okay. Well, she, you know, you never know.
Never know.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to follow or subscribe to the Success Coaching Podcast and like us on Facebook at Success Magazine Coaching.